How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Lakers. I am Anthony Irwin. As always, you can find our show on Audio Boom, on Silver Screen and Roll, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and then as always, I guess we do these shows quite a bit. But anywho, I was off to a good start. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, how are you holding up? It's hot again.
Yeah, it's hot, and like it's just like it makes it worse. Like when you just can't get your intros right, it just makes me angry, and then like I start to get hotter because I'm angry, and you know it's just let's just get through this thing.
All right, so we were going to talk about some of the goings on. Brandon Ingram was featured by Baxter Holmes today. We're recording this, by the way, on a Tuesday. It's going to run on a Friday. By the time you're listening to this, I'll be sipping some kind of adult beverage in Cancun. But this is.
And I'm calling my shot. DeMarcus Cousins will have been traded to the Lakers. It's happening.
Future Lakers.
You're listening to this on Friday morning. Welcome to the Lakers, DeMarcus.
But we're recording this on a Tuesday. And today, Baxter Holmes wrote an article, a feature, a really good one on Brandon Ingram and what it's been taking, the whirlwind summer he's had. So that was really interesting. And then as well, Larry Nance Jr. went on the Basketball Insiders podcast with
Alex Kennedy. Gracious.
Yeah, there we go. Alex Kennedy and shed some light on, the chemistry that the Lakers are trying to build, the relationship between him and Randall. So all that good stuff. Make sure you guys keep an eye for that. And it's probably going to be a talking point somewhere down the line, probably when I get back from Mexico.
Today, I'll have written approximately 900 articles on it by then.
Today, what we are going to do, because it's kind of a topic du jour, is du jour.
Man, you're just on the struggle bus today. You want to start this thing over?
1, 2, 3, Cancun. No, but today, there's been a lot of conversation about the Olympics. They're getting ready to get going. We found out that the basketball team is going to stay on some luxury yacht instead of in Olympic Village, which is phenomenal.
Well, the basketball team never stays in the Olympic Village. Like the other U.S. athletes usually do, but the basketball team, I mean, like they it's just not practical for a bunch of multimillionaires to stay there and like the extra security they'd have to have and all that stuff.
I just find it
hilarious. And also they don't want to stay there.
Yeah, I also find it hilarious though. That it's a yacht. It's a luxury
like yacht. they don't want to be like on the mainland right now. Like they're like, nope, mosquitoes can't travel out on the open ocean. I'm pretty like Kevin Durant already, like he doesn't think that they're going outside the whole trip or something. I don't know, just based off of him saying, like you can't get bitten by a mosquito in a gym, which like I don't know if that's true, but
I imagine if LeBron was playing and Wade was playing and Chris Paul was playing and they could ride a banana boat onto the shore every day, how great would that be?
That'd be perfect. That would honestly, like I know that would really psych out their opponents, I think. Mm-hmm. Because if you show up on a banana boat, a basketball game, like you're clearly like you clearly do not consider that a team that you need to intimidate, which like might intimidate them more.
Right. I would say, think about the trade we made. We could go from the storyline of the guys riding in on a banana boat to talking about Draymond's,
But pass. Let's move on.
We're already off topic.
But on to the next one.
But out here in LA, because there aren't any Lakers playing in the Olympics, I did think it was interesting.
Well, until DeMarcus Cousins is a Laker on Friday when our audience is listening to this.
Good point. But the conversation today has been about Kobe's time with Team USA and his impact on Team USA and how good he was in 08 and the role he still played in 2012, both times bringing home the gold, unlike that bum Tim Duncan who won free and bronze. What a loser. But the I guess we could start with, obviously we're going to start chronologically, and then we're going to talk about 2012, and then with the larger overriding message as far as his impact on the way we look at Team USA and the style that, or, you know, what not only the way we look at it as fans, but the way NBA players look at it as people who would want to compete for spots. Kobe played a pretty pivotal role in that along with many other guys. So that's going to be what we will wrap up the show with today. So 2008, let's go back to 2008. Brighter times. Well, not really necessarily brighter times. The Lakers had just lost to the Boston Celtics in embarrassing fashion in a six-game series in the NBA championship. Kobe says he's going to play in those Olympics, along with Braun, along with Melo, along with, you know, Wade, and it becomes they're known as the Redeem Team. And it was the Redeem Team, I believe, directly in response to 2004 when they lost, and you know, and not even making the finals, but they lost.
Yeah, in Athens, which was just a, like, that team was a disaster.
It really was, and you know, so props to the NBA and props to the guys playing in the NBA. They said, "Hey, we're way too good at this sport to lose at any stage in these games, let alone, you know." Again, not making the final. I don't recall being more embarrassed than I was about that 2004 team in my entire time rooting for basketball.
Shouts to Allen Iverson. Just I think he's still jacking a 35 footer in Greece.
So 2008 rolls around, and this was a result of a long standing process, right? These guys started working for the team, or, you know, working out for the team, working out together. They competed, you know, in the FIBAs together. That was where we first saw, you know, what the team might look like. And then, again, props to Colangelo and props to Coach K and to the guys individually for saying, no, this is going to be a thing moving forward too. And 2008 rolls around, and Kobe was huge in 2008 on the court. So how do you, where were you? How do you remember watching 2008? Because that was a fun memory for me.
I remember watching 2008 on delay because it was in China. So there's like a huge time difference. So I don't know if you were staying up till whatever hour to watch. Yeah. I was not. And so I remember watching like highlights. I remember watching some of the games on delay. I think the gold medal game maybe I stayed up for. I don't remember. But I remember watching it. I just don't remember if I stayed up for it. But yeah, I mean, Kobe was I was like a total Kobe stan probably in 2008. And so I mean, that probably tints my memory a little bit, but he just seemed like far and away the best player on the team.
I wouldn't say far and
far and away. Okay, maybe that was too strong, but he seemed like clearly the best player on the team.
I'll say this. He was, I don't know if he was necessarily the most talented player, but he seemed the most ready to assume that limelight, right? When the game got close against Spain, remember, there was serious doubt. I remember watching the game legitimately nervous, like, gosh, we're going to lose again. You know, we're somehow the rest of the world has caught up to us.
I remember I was like, at least Powell's going to be the one to win it, I guess. Like, I was trying to talk myself into that.
But, yeah, it was. I remember being stressed about that game because, yeah, it's just we should never lose at basketball. It's like if we played football in the Olympics, we should never lose at football.
No, right? I read somewhere today, it's like the U.S. basically – like if you did a draft for like the top 15 players in the world, all 15 of them would come from the U.S. And so like they should not lose at basketball.
Right. They should not play close games at basketball even. But here we were. And Spain at the time had a really good team. You had Pau in his prime, and the European game, you know, the world style play, style of play that was is used in the Olympics is absolutely perfect for Powell.
Yeah, people forget how amazing Powell was then, and especially in that style of game.
It's why I kept getting frustrated when, you know, Powell was just perpetually on the trade market, on the trade block for the Lakers, when I'm thinking to myself, wait, how can this guy dominate the best team that we could put together, you know, and keep his team in it, keep that Spanish team in it almost single-handedly, and yet we're just shipping this guy out for whatever we can possibly get. It never made any sense to me.
Nope. I have no rebuttal.
So, fourth quarter rolls around. Kobe, you know, does Kobe things. And this is like people, I poke fun at Kobe stands a bunch. I was one at one point. I'll completely cop to it. He made me as passionate about basketball as I am today. But I can think of few things that ignited a fire under a fan base like Kobe taking over that Olympic game, that Olympic gold medal game, with guys like LeBron on the court, with guys like Wade on the court. And Kobe takes that game basically by the throat, makes big shot after big shot, makes big pass after big pass. And before that, the narrative was, yeah, this is LeBron's league now. And I just remember watching that, laughing to myself, like, well, let's take it easy on that narrative a bit.
And like 2008 was, that was before I was on Twitter, certainly. Were you on Twitter? Was Twitter a thing in 2008?
I don't believe so. I think 2010 was when I signed on for the first time.
Yeah. What were we doing during that game? Like, were we just like shouting at our neighbors, like our bad basketball takes? Like, I think I remember telling my brother, like, this is why Kobe is so much better than LeBron. At that point, I think that's where we threw our bad basketball opinions, was like, you just like talk to family members about them during games, which like, who wants to do that? Like, thank God for Twitter.
I was watching the game. I watched it and I stayed up. Jen's parents were out of town and she and I stayed up. We actually had like an Olympic party, I believe. sorry, Roger and Linda, if you're listening right now. But we had this Olympic party.
Oh, man, you are retroactively in so much trouble.
So we all got together, and it was about 20 or 30 of us in this house, and we're watching this. We're all decked out in Team USA stuff. 2010, I think I was probably not legally drinking. No, probably not. No, yeah, I was.
Who cares? You know, let's not incriminate ourselves. That's fine.
I was good to go. I was fine. Right. So we had this party and we all got together for it. And it was an amazing time. And it was, this was before Jen and I believe were engaged. And this was when Jen saw, you know, if there was ever a time that Jen would have left me, it was because of how psychotic I was acting while Kobe was making these shots. It
all
probably wasn't pretty.
For our audience.
What's that?
All important details for our audience.
Well, the only reason, like I said, is I'm messing with you. Well, right. Well, the reason I bring all that up is, I guess the tidbit about, you know, incriminating myself wasn't that important. But what I do find, I guess, relevant to the discussion that was going on today, and the way, you know, Lakers fans look at Kobe now that he's gone, is again, that was our moment. That was the moment where Lakers fans said to ourselves, that's our dude. He's showing up for us.
It was like, see, if the Celtics hadn't cheated and put like three superstars together, he would have won the title. He's the best player.
Oh, no. You know what? Like, if Bill Simmons gets to complain about Kendrick Perkins not being healthy for the next season, I get to say Andrew Bynum not being healthy probably made an impact on the series before.
No, see, that doesn't matter. Because our the difference is that the coach of the organization doesn't bring that up whenever he gets asked about it. But hey, just in case you were wondering, Doc Rivers he's actually our first sponsor of this podcast, and this segment is brought to you by the Celtics starting five is still undefeated. So, I feel like if they got those guys together today, they might still go undefeated in the playoffs. Like we don't know because they were undefeated then, and so you can't prove that Doc Rivers is wrong.
You know what's kind of cool is that sources close to Doc Rivers said he was actually disappointed when ESPN named their new website The Undefeated, and it wasn't just a picture of that starting five.
It wasn't just like Kendrick Perkins in memoriam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I hate to break it to you, Doc, but I think it was the website means a little bit more than that.
This got off on a salty, salty tangent.
So I guess we'll start with the impact on the court that Kobe had on, you know, the guys that surrounded him. And this isn't just me. This isn't me standing for the guy. All those guys, LeBron, Wade, Paul. Was Durant on that team? Durant was on that team.
No,
right?
No. Too young.
Who else was on? There were other guys on that team.
Tayshaun Prince was on that team, I remember, for some reason.
Jason
Kidd. Dwight Howard was on that team. Paul Millsap. No, Paul Millsap was on a different. Was Paul? No, he was on a different team, USA.
Maybe we should pull up the roster. Was on that team. So, but most notably, LeBron said that his career doesn't go where it gets to or where it got without learning the type of work that Kobe put in. Not only on the court, because Kobe works out like a nutcase.
He's not the only guy to say that, but like multiple guys would talk about how they would come down at the team hotel and Kobe would be working out at like 4 a.m., mm-hmm. like, well, getting shots up.
Yeah, not only the actual work, the actual basketball work that Kobe put in, but I remember, gosh, I wish I could remember who said it. I want to say it was LeBron because it seems like the kind of thing LeBron would say, but he recalled the conversation that he had with Kobe, or that somebody had with Kobe, and they felt, whoever it was, felt as if the conversation was actually benefiting Kobe as much as it was the person he was shedding, you know, he was imparting wisdom to, right? That Kobe was getting a read for all these guys. Right now I'm watching House of Cards, and the scene that comes to mind is when Frank Underwood realizes, holy cow, I'm not here to vet this other vice presidential candidate. I'm here getting vetted, you know, he's trying to figure me out whether I want the thing.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But that's kind of what I look back on is saying, you know, these guys started realizing, yeah, it doesn't just take a crazy work ethic, but you also have to be really smart about the way you go about the game.
Yeah, I think that probably goes for like watching film and those type of things. But I just remember afterwards hearing multiple guys talk about the workout aspect of it, of like he just kind of showed them, especially like he had played later into the season than any of those guys. And he was working out more than anyone. I think even Dwight was like mentioning things like that. But before he joined the Lakers, like was mentioning how much of an effect that had on him that Kobe was doing that. And like I think the other effect is I think he played so well there that he scared LeBron, Bosh, and Wade into being like, hey, we need to form a super team to take this guy down, because otherwise, like they just committed right there in the back of the team bus after seeing Kobe play in the gold medal game. I think that's exactly how it happened.
The other fun story that came out from 2008, now that I'm thinking about it, was how few people liked Dwight Howard after those games.
I think that went for LeBron, too. I remember hearing stuff about him. I think Woj wrote something about that.
Well, that seems like the kind of thing Woj would write. But I heard from multiple writers that Dwight Howard didn't look particularly good, in that scenario, where all those guys were just insanely, and again, to their credit, because these are guys, these are multimillionaires who are given the opportunity only so often to enjoy an offseason in the absolute prime of their lives, where they have the energy to go out and do whatever the heck they want. And they used all that energy in this case to go out and bring gold back to America. And it was the amount of joy that I saw that after they won there really put a good feeling in the old ticker.
Yeah. Does it make you want to chant USA right now, or do we save that for after we get off the air?
Let's wait for one of us to make a good joke, and then we'll say USA. So we won't be saying USA.
Yeah, probably not.
How about the impact? Do you think that, you know, we talked about Kobe learning from guys even while he's technically mentoring them, but do you think it had any kind of impact on the leader he became for the Lakers? God bless you.
Thank you. USA. You know, I think it, I don't know that it necessarily had an impact. Maybe it did kind of teach him a little bit of how he needed to lead a team differently after kind of, but I think that he kind of learned that lesson before that 2008 season. I don't think that the 2008 finals were necessarily reflective of him as a leader. I think it was just they encountered a team that was better than them at the time. And you know, they were missing Andrew Bynum, like we were talking about. Yeah, but I mean, he probably learned how he had to communicate to, like, he probably did learn how to deal with a bunch of different personalities on that team, because you have guys that are more alpha, like CP3 and Dwayne Wade and guys like that. And then you have guys that are a little bit more beta, like Dwight Howard and LeBron James. And you have to learn how to get, like, the most out of all of those guys. And, like, that was an unnecessary shot at LeBron. I apologize. Grouping him in white was just, that was uncalled for.
USA.
No, but like, no. Not like beta male or like whatever. Like, I don't want to get into the machismo aspect of it, but guys that, like, you know, they're guys that you could probably, like, him and Chris Paul could probably just, like, scream in each other's faces and be fine with that. Whereas like a guy like Dwight or LeBron, you have to be like, oh, you want to be more buddy buddy with them in order to get the most out of them. It's not necessarily like you don't want to be confronting them. So maybe it did teach him how to deal with different personalities a little bit in a way.
Yeah, I would say the larger lesson, or if there was a lesson to be learned heading into the next season, was what he took away from, or what drove him towards, you know, or what drove him after losing to Boston the way they did. Because remember, the way they lost to Boston was incredibly painful. The way they lost to Boston, where, you know, they had the collapse, the 23-point collapse in what was a game five, you know, where they, you know, and then in game six, losing by 40 and having Gatorade showered onto the court by the opposing team in Boston, with all those crazy ass Boston fans going nuts. That I think impacted how hard Kobe was working as much as anything. But yeah, I think you bring up a really good point about what it takes to lead guys who have so many different personalities. And it wasn't like he could just tell Chris Paul, "Hey, F off, I'm the alpha male," right? Like, you couldn't do that with that team. He might've tried, and I would imagine it probably didn't go over very well. But you know, he probably, if he learned a softer touch that he took into the next season, that's great. And it wound up really benefiting for the Lakers as they went on to win the next two titles.
Yeah.
So the next thing I wanted to talk about was the 2012 Team USA, you know, the trip that they took and Kobe partook in, the second gold medal that he brought, which, you know, again, I'm not here to count these things, but he has two gold medals. And Tim Duncan has won bronze. Sips cup of tea. But the the thing that I find interesting or impressive is, and you actually, you know what? You should make the point, because you made it before we went on the air, as far as, you know, how many guys are playing nowadays.
Oh, so I think, well, in 2012, we were going to talk a little bit about how Kobe kind of, he took more of a back seat that year, and he let other guys kind of do the bulk of the work, and he would come in and get his spot minutes, but it was more of like a leadership thing. And I think that a lot of guys have cited that since then, it's like he's kind of part of the reason they took being a part of the national team is like such an honor. And mm-hmm. So I think that you really see that this year, where a bunch of guys like LeBron, Curry, Westbrook, got like a bunch of really good players held out. And rather than other players seeing that as like, well, okay, LeBron's holding out, why do I have to go? They took it as like, oh, LeBron's holding out, like, I can go and represent the US, and that's an honor. And I think that Kobe, who, like, being such a revered player at the time in 2008 and 2012, being so widely respected by the rest of the league and guys who weren't even in the league yet that are playing now, I think that had as much of an impact on that culture as anything. I think. Like, we credited Jerry Colangelo and Coach K for building that, and they deserve some credit, but it also was kind of the buy-in of those first guys. And at the time when Kobe was one of the first guys on the Redeem team to buy in, he was one of the biggest names. And I think that that kind of helped build that culture.
Right. It's kind of like, and there are all, everybody, you know, laughs at parallels between Kobe and Jordan. So go ahead and get that out of the way if you want. But the Dream Team doesn't happen if Jordan doesn't show up, right? Like, that's a completely different – we look at that completely differently if Jordan doesn't say, all right, I'm in for this too, right? And that also started, you know, I think if my memory serves, and it rarely does, but Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were the first guys to say – or Magic was the first guy to kind of say, yeah, let's do this, right? Because he was fresh off the HIV scare. He wanted to get back on the court. He saw this as a great opportunity to do so. He wanted to play with Larry Bird, and Larry Bird had the really bad back, right? And then when Jordan started seeing, you know, a couple of the first dominoes fall, and he eventually signed on, other superstars in their actual prime started saying, okay, yeah, this sounds like something that's legitimate, you know? And the impact that it wound up having on the world in terms of basketball is still being felt today.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that, you know, the Redeem Team had anywhere near that impact, because the world, you know, the basketball around the world has already taken giant strides, right? It didn't have the same strides to take after those games. But when you look at, you know, this current team that is going to Rio right now does not have LeBron, does not have Steph Curry, does not have Russell Westbrook, does not have Anthony Davis, and yet they're still far and away the favorites to win this thing and win it handily, right? And the guys that are there have completely bought into this culture that doesn't occur just by, you know, Coach K spouting off or Jerry Colangelo spouting off about what needs to happen for these teams to be successful. That's
Coach
not how
K
that works.
Telling them why dunks are actually bad and
yeah, yeah. That was laughable. Just leave it to Duke. That's why all their basketball players stink when they get to the NBA, except for Brandon Ingram. He only spent 1 year.
I was
going to
say, he just walked right into that one.
But yeah, I think that's and it's something that I think if you were to ask Kobe, he would probably be pretty proud of the fact that this current culture, this current climate around Team USA exists. And again, Harrison and I aren't saying that it is only Kobe who did that.
Yeah. Right?
Jason Kidd had a big impact on that.
Chauncey
obviously,
Billups.
Yeah, Chauncey, you know, you look at LeBron actually buying
LeBron
into the
himself.
Message. Yeah, like these guys had to buy in eventually, which is very important. I'm, you know, the point we're making here is that I don't think that occurs if it wasn't for somebody with such a large brand
cash.
and star, yeah, cash is a good word for it, as Kobe participating the way he did had on it.
And also, this is a Lakers podcast, so we're going to talk about like, you can go Locked On Cavs can go ahead and talk about LeBron's impact on the national team, and Locked On Hawks can talk about Dwight Howard's, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah, we're homers.
No, it's not that we're homers, it's just that's, you know, the, like, we aren't here to talk about LeBron, you know, other than that the Lakers need to go and recruit him, like, as you've heard already in my Harrison's Hot Takes segment from Wednesday.
All right, so the last point that we wanted to make, and when we talked about the impact that it had, and we said that was going to wrap up the podcast here, but hypothetically speaking, and obviously it can't happen now, just logistically speaking, the team has already been named. They already have guys getting ready to go to Rio. But
sorry, Harrison
Kobe
Barnes, head back to Dallas.
Boy, that would complete his summer. But had Kobe said earlier on in the process that he wanted to participate, that he wanted to play in these games, had Kobe not had that 60-point game, do you think he wants to play in these games? This is another fun hypothetical. But should Kobe, if he said that he wanted to play in this, should Kobe have made the team?
Well, I think that it says something that they basically said that he would have been on the team if he had wanted to play. Like, they reached out to him and were willing to let, like, they watched last year. They know how he was not good for most of it, and mm-hmm. they were still willing to, because of his influence on the national team and the program, bring him, use up a roster spot and bring him along to Rio. And also because, like, they could put you out there and they'd probably still have a chance of winning by like 20 or 30. But like, I mean, I think the main part of it is that there was a lot of respect for him in the program. And so that says as much as anything that how valuable they found him, the fact that they would have brought him along to Rio this year, and that it's even a discussion after watching him play last year.
And the year before.
Yeah. And the year before that. But like, other than those years, like, so yeah, so I actually lost kind of my train of thought. What was your original question? Do I think he should have played?
Well, that was the original. No, but I think another fun hypothetical is if he doesn't score 60 points and hit that game winner against Utah, because I think that was a seal. You know, that was it. Once that occurred, Kobe said he is flat out not even going to think about playing.
I think he had already said he wasn't thinking about playing for Team USA.
Yeah, but there's always ways you can get around it.
Yeah,
right?
Like, I mean, maybe if he had shot something like 6 for 24 in his final game, then maybe he would have wanted to come back and redeem himself for Team USA. But right. I still don't think so. I think he would have hung it up and just said he was done. I think he was kind of done by that point. But I mean, I would have enjoyed watching it. It would have made this team infinitely more interesting.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that with this team isn't interesting at all. Like, on the basketball court, you can talk about what they are on Snapchat, but on the basketball court, they just aren't interesting. I've tried to watch some of these games, and you know, whether it's poor shooting, whether it's whatever, and they're still going to run away with it. There are two different discussions that we had earlier. We talked about how good this team is, you know, and that they're still the far and away favorites to bring home gold this time. And right now we're talking about how interesting, how exciting they actually are on the court. And look, say what you will about Kobe, but putting him, you know, in this world setting makes this team a lot more interesting.
Right? Yeah, I mean, right now, I think the most interesting storyline is, like, who punches another man in the nether regions first, Draymond Green or Nicholas Batum? Like, they both have kind of a history of doing that. And, like, I'd say Batum right now is, like, a sneaky favorite because he did it in international play already. So maybe he goes for two. Like, he sees the attention Draymond's been getting for it, and he goes for another one. But, yeah, I mean, other than that, especially because the team's going to be so dominant. It would be one thing, like, if they weren't exciting and there was a chance they were going to lose anyway, but they just aren't. Like, right now, it's like, how many spins can DeMar DeRozan complete before dunking on someone? Which is, like, interesting, but you got to think he's not going to try that many times during a game.
Right. So that's the thing, is that, and this isn't this is going to sound like a slight to the guys who made it. Look, if you make it and you get to represent your country, you're named of one of 12. I think they have 12 guys on the team or something like that.
15.
If you're one of the 15 people who get to represent the United States of America in basketball, a sport that we are probably better at, maybe football is probably the top sport, but basketball,
Olympic
I would
sports.
Say.
Olympic sports.
Yeah, the Olympic sport that our country is the best at, that's, you get to pat yourself on the back forever. That's something that you get to wear. That goes at the top of your resume forever.
Now Harrison Barnes on his resume has NBA champion and U.S. gold medalist Harry B. on there. So
exactly. You know. So, yeah, I would, with all that said, this team is just not very watchable. And it's one thing, you know, all these Team USA guys, any Team USA experience is going to be filled with its share of blowouts. That's how this thing works. That's how they're just that good. We are that good at basketball. But this is in that kind of middle ground where it's one thing to be really good, But then it's another thing altogether to be, you know, to spank your team and have moments where you go like, all right, this is still must-see TV. This team hasn't done that yet, and I'm not sure they're really quite capable of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see kind of DeMarcus Cousins on a good team. I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah,
I mean, there are some interesting angles. This team isn't going to be like we're all still going to watch, but
have you watched any game yet?
Not in its entirety, but they've just been like friendlies.
I mean, I watched in 2008 and 2012. I watched every single one of those games. I DVR'd them actually. And I've tried. Like I said, I DVR'd the first one of these, and I got through halfway, and I just not a very interesting. And that's this is really early in the process.
Stan. That's true.
I have Kobe. Not even Bryant. I have Kobe on the back of all my shirts. I don't want to turn around because it's a little embarrassing.
Well, we're not on video anyway. This is an audio podcast now. But good just point. People, yeah. You should know that he's wearing a Kobe Bryant jersey right now.
All right, so that does it for this week's podcast. We talked to Jeff Garcia about Tim Duncan, then we reacted to the reaction about that podcast, and today we talked about Kobe's impact on the Olympics, the Olympics' impact on Kobe, the entire impact that it had on the NBA as a whole, and finally whether or not Kobe should have played or would it have made it more fun to watch Kobe play in these games. And because it is a Lakers podcast, I'm pretty safe saying that most of our audience is going to agree that it would have been more fun to watch Kobe play in these Olympics. Maybe not necessarily for the actual basketball on the court, but the way people respond to Kobe is a little different than with anybody else on the team.
Yep, I agree.
All right. Thank you very much for listening this week. We will be back on Monday. I will not be back on Monday. Harrison will have this all to himself. He's gonna handle a Facebook Live.
It's my time to shine now.
It's Harrison's time to shine. I'm going to be shining in another way. I'm going to come back with a nice glow to me. I'm a little pale for this time of year, so I'm going to go.
Yeah, it's an audio podcast, Anthony. People have no idea. Like, I keep trying to explain this to you, but he's just too old. Guys, forgive him. He doesn't understand what audio means. I mean, they can only hear us. They can't see us.
Dang it. All right. Talk to you later, Harrison. Talk to everybody later.
USA. 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 USA.